With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Wake up in the morning feeling like
Waterman is extremely well. She's very slippery.
You don't own me.
Okay, now the tough question.
Is this a try? Yes or no?
Just because I'm a woman.
Hello, friend.
Hey, we're back.
We're back. A little hiatus last week. Sorry, I'm just checking my watch to see what my exercise minutes are today, because I did a high intensity interval training session this morning. Don't know if you've heard
of that. You sound like Uncle Bryn.
No, that is one of my favourite scenes in Gavin and Stacey, when he turns the spare bedroom into a gym and he's working out in his jeans.
I've not seen that. Oh my God.
I'm going to find it. And then Smithy comes down and does like a couple of reps on the like weights bench as well. It's amazing. It's so good.
I do wonder, with the lockdown gyms, obviously that is literally any athlete of any level was putting out there with their training, and you know, it was all fine and it was always really engaging to start off with, and they were like obviously completely over filming themselves in it. But how many people bought home gym equipment, like how many hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of a kit is now completely redundant
and drying on it. You know what, I'm going to tell you a story, so I probably shouldn't like reveal this, but I know that you're going to be interviewing this person this week. So at the beginning of lockdown, Stuart Hogg, international rugby player, big name, had a load of gym equipment delivered to his garage, and he turned it into a home gym. And every day he'd go into the garage and tell Gillian that he had to do his program for the club and that it was 2 hours long. And then one day Gillian asked if she could come and join in, and it turned out it was only 30 minutes, but he'd spend an extra hour and a half hiding from the kids in the garage every day.
You know what? There must be so many people that have done that, because they normally use the going to the gym in inverted commas as an escape.
And I'm trying to think of things that, like, you know, we didn't have a home gym, or at least I stayed up at mum and dad's. We've got a like a knockoff watt bike, so my dad would go and do that. But I don't think my dad's ever washed his car as many times as he did during lockdown to like get away from me and mum on a daily basis. And he'd like spread it out, so we'd like do the body of the car, and then the next morning he'd get up and he'd go, gonna have to go out and do those wheels today, so I'll be out this afternoon, just don't disturb, doing the wheels.
It is weird though, isn't it, because I remember the first week of lockdown, I got to like day six or so, and I went into this ultimate panic, and I was like, we're going to be coming out of lockdown next week, and I've not done loads of jobs that I now have time to do. And literally within about 2 seconds of thinking that, I was on my knees in the kitchen, emptying cupboards, cleaning out cupboards.
But you would like ring me and you'd be like, oh, look at this. And I'd be like, what? And you'd be like, emptied this cupboard. I'd be like, where's the stuff, Nolly? And you'd be like, on the floor in the living room, but it's not in the cupboard anymore, is it?
Right. Talking about hoarding, I've got to tell you this. So we finally gone Christmassy in Southwest London. I was actually going to say my address then. Probably not ideal to reveal that publicly. But I was busy working, which obviously we're going to talk about over the weekend, and on Sunday I was at Twickenham, and I can't remember what... Oh, so Simone in the morning had said to me, it was really, really sweet. He was like, it's the last round. I know you're going to be amazing. You're going to completely sparkle. And I was like, oh, like it was really sweet. Anyway, so I arrived and I was like, team, we're going to sparkle. Anyway, I'm just going on my phone because I've forgotten the word. So we've decided that sparkle was going to get into the opening link. And then, bear with. The producer,
John. I don't want to ruin this story, but you know I have watched the programme.
What's the word then?
Like, Ayo was like, oh, Nolly, you look nice. And you're like, you look spoolydoodoodoofus. And I was like, and at first I was like, what? Why have they not cut that out? What on earth has she said?
To coruscate. So I said that I was referring to, right, start the story again. Simone said sparkle. I told the team. Then basically John was like, a really good word for sparkle is coruscate, it's coruscating. And I was like, wow. Oh my God, like I really need to get that in. LJ will be very impressed and know that I've not come up with this, but I'm still going to get it in. Anyway, so we got it in and it was all great. Anyway, I texted Simone and I was like, oh, I've got a surprise for you on the show. And he was like, oh, I've got a surprise for you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I know he'd been into town, so I thought, oh, maybe he's just got me like a cake or something or an extra large tomato. Anyway, I arrived back home and there's like flashing in the front room.
God, I thought you meant
this. And he went, oh, the TV's on. I was like, the TV is not orange and red and green. Like, no, it's not. Have you done? And anyway, he proceeded in telling me how he'd been able to get this new Christmas tree. So I walk into the front room. And no joke, it looks like it should have come from Claridge's. It is that big in our house. It's taking over. Oh, it's a beautifully formed, very, very plump tree in the middle of our room. And the room was freezing. And I was like, have you not got the heating on? And it was so big, it's covering the radiator. All of the Christmas decorations are up in the loft. Now, you know how much I like to hoard. He was like, I went up to loft and I was like, no! Anyway, he turns around and he's got a massive cut across his nose because he'd basically pulled stuff in everything. My Jenga block of all of my stuff, of years of hoarding, fell on his face. And a folder that from my uni days smashed him in the nose, gave him a bleeding nose, and then Koya was barking. He nearly fell off the ladder. But anyway, he survived.
And the tree looks great.
And the tree is great. It's pretty cold in the flat, in the house. I don't even know where I live.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put people off the scent because I nearly said my address.
This is going to make you laugh. I made gingerbread for my BBC boss and colleagues. I made flat pack gingerbread houses because I'm that much of a suck up. And also because I'm that much of a suck up, I have just collected a box to pack a panettone into for me to send to the Varneys to say thank you for being so nice. And I did that feature the week before last.
Mate, you're such a suck up.
People remember nice people.
Yeah, you know what? To be fair, I actually really enjoy, I say this like I'm shocked every time that you do good work, but I it's up there with one of my favourite things that you've done, mainly because it starts off with you walking to the camera, and I had this like this flash. Weirdly, I'm not quite sure where the link was, but you know when James Bond comes out of the water.
Oh yeah. Listening... Okay.
Like you in a prisoner of war camp in Wales.
It reminds me because I've got black boots and black tights on. I feel like it looks like the old beginning credits of The Bill. You know, it used to be those like.
Oh, I love The Bill.
But those shoes, like I've worn those for a few pieces and they look nice. And then my mum said I look like one of the tweenies. Do you remember they used to wear those big boots?
And mate, you know what? It was a cool story. And for those that haven't seen it.
It's an amazing story. For those who haven't seen it, you may have read about it because after I put the work into doing the piece, every newspaper then ran the story after my feature and loads of them like used the quotes from it. That's not happened to me before. And it's one of those things where it wound me up a little bit because I just thought,
You take it as a compliment, though?
Yeah, you do. But it, like, they put, like, in the Telegraph piece, they put speaking to Scrum 5. And I was a bit like, speaking to LJJ. but they were, well, just, they were such a lovely family, the Varneys, and it was an amazing story to tell. And then it felt like it was written in the stars that Stephen then got his first start against Wales and played really well. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does when he goes back to Gloucester. Him and Lewis Rees-Zammit have played together since they were 16 at Hartbury College, and it's really nice to see two youngsters who've gone through this Autumn Nations Cup and done well. And that is my favourite thing about the Autumn Nations Cup this year, that we've seen youth on the global stage making debuts and doing well. Danielle Sharm Waterman, what has been your favourite thing about the Autumn Nations Cup?
I think there's loads of things. I think from a rugby perspective, so to put it into perspective with your comment about young players, completely agree. And I found out that 42 players, so a little bit of stats, 42 players got first caps, which I just think is so cool, because 42? As much as, yeah, 42 new caps over the 4 weeks, 13 games, there was 259 different players that played in the autumn, which, as much as, like, it wasn't maybe the best rugby, and I don't know, loads of people were moaning about certain things. For me, the fact that the games are played, people got that, you know, over 250 people got to wear their country shirt. And it wasn't, you know, not in full stadiums, but obviously with no one there. But yeah, I think that was probably one of the coolest things. And then, and also, as sad as it sounds, the fact that the crowd at Twickenham, the game was epic. It was ridiculous. Like, everyone was like going like, what's happening? Like, I had to go onto my email to check what happened if there wasn't a score after the...
Yeah. I have to say, I'm not in favour of sudden death. I don't think in rugby that works.
It's what's difficult is that you are basically screwed if you don't get the restart, because England just smashed it long, and then it's really hard to get out of your 22 and the pressure now, and teams can play to get that penalty. Yeah. What was mental though was they got that penalty, own foul hit in the post. I literally I blurted out laughter because I couldn't believe it had happened. And then the fact that they kicked, and the one person in world rugby that I would put probably my house on catching a high ball, then drops it and believe it or not, like, knocks it on. I was like, what is going on?
So what, Ben Coles from the Telegraph like tweeted, I actually laughed out loud. And I think that was like, it wasn't like you found it funny, it was like, it was such a kind of like guttural natural reaction. Yeah. Like, this is a comedy of errors at this point. Like, what is that thing of like, there had been so many tweets beforehand of people saying, you know, oh, France is third 15 against England, disrespecting the tournament. Like, poor Andrew Cotter, at no point in his preparation last week did he probably think, right, I will just cast my eye over the rules for a draw. just in case. He probably literally was sat there like, give me the
Keen to the
World Cup final with the super over. Nobody really knew what was going on. And also because it is such a rarity for, not obviously for there to be draws in rugby, but for there to be draws in matches where we have to have a result, we don't have, it's not like football where it's extra time penalties, or as it used to be, golden goal and then penalties eventually. We're now, we change it every time. Like, the penalty shootout rules, if it had gone to that, have now changed to what they were 4 years ago, which had changed from when the Blues lost to Leicester in the Heineken Cup in 2009. We can't really make our minds up about like what the ideal way to do this is.
So, just to say, right, this is so bad. I still feel guilty, and we're like 8 years on. So I was doing some announcing at the UK school games for Rugby Sevens, and I was with Amy T and Sunza, and we were basically like, as a try was scored, we would announce it. If there was like dead time, we'd just be chatting amongst each other, just like to the five parents that were there. And it was hilarious, but we forgot that basically the speakers on, it was really quiet on our side because the speakers were on the other side. And one of the speakers was projected to where all of the teams and all the players were. So anyway, end of the semi-final goes to sudden, like they don't score, extra time, don't score. And they're like, right, going to drop goal in front of the posts. And one of the girls like absolutely butchered this kick. And I basically said before the kick, something about like, oh, you know, great opportunity. She's been, you know, such fantastic, no pressure. And she missed it. And then I reacted and I was like, oh God, like basically on the microphone.
Oh,
and then everyone was so bad. And like one of the coaches came over to me, stammered down afterwards, coach in Ireland, was literally like, Nolly, you're brutal. And I was like, oh.
That's really scarred, that poor kid.
No. But anyway, we go back to the Autumn Nations Cup.
It's gone to penalties in the World Cup final when you played, who would have been the nominated kickers?
I can tell you that I would never have been nominated.
So on
Saturday, even if they got through to
They had to nominate five kickers. So you'd imagine that all five of them are going to come from your back line.
Harriet Miller-Mills is a decent kick. You know what? Actually, before the 2000...
You would have put Rocky in there before you put your hand
up. Yeah. Rocky, right. So
we're in Amsterdam. Rocky's a great kicker now.
No, genuinely. So in Amsterdam, my first ever rugby tour, I was... second or third year of uni, so like 19, 20. Never been allowed on like a proper senior tour because like I went straight into kind of senior setup and that's what wasn't allowed. And so I toured with Henley over to Amsterdam Sevens. There was seven front row and three backs in our team. We made it to a semi-final. How we did it, we were playing Samurai, right? So it's like all the Bristol girls, all the Welsh, like non-Evans, you know, all these like international players. Like obviously I was an international Sevens player, but I was with like Rocky and the rest of the front row basically. Anyway, I scored this like breakaway try, and but right in the corner. And that, I think they'd scored and like, I don't know. Anyway, it was to like level the game to get the kick. And so everyone was like trotting back, like no chance. The crowd go mental, right? And Rocky's going, FNL, I only got the kick. Did you see it? And we were like, no. She like nudged this drop goal from the touchline to draw the game, right? And we're so hungover. I was like being sick before the game. I was like, I don't want to play anymore. Like, I can't play in a final.
Maybe that's what Rocky needed to slot the kick, a bit of Dutch courage. Excuse the pun.
Oh, God. Cringe. Anyway, they kicked off to that. One of our players just booted it because they just couldn't be bothered to run anymore. And they caught it and they were like, run back. And you could literally physically see all of our team like just kind of dive out the way, like do these comedy dives for tackles so that they could score so we didn't have to do any more. But anyway, I would put myself behind Rocky and most players, to be fair. But I'm okay with that.
And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because you made it into World Rugby's Team of the Decade at the World Rugby Awards this week.
I can't believe you just read that off a bit of paper and just didn't know it off by heart.
Like when we chatted earlier on, I'd completely forgotten that we needed to mention that. Yeah, there you are, Team of the Decade.
I know, pretty mad, really.
Especially since you beat out the player of the decade.
Yeah, so there's been a bit of like debate about it. Basically, the player of the decade was from all of the world players of the year. So they put them in. Vote. Yeah, public vote. And then the one I got in was an expert panel that I was actually part of. I didn't select myself, obviously. I didn't like put myself
in. I'll check out here, guys.
Yeah.
I'll just leave the bottle of wine on the table that I've provided.
Well, they were saying... they're like, yeah, you obviously can't vote for the position that you're playing in. And I was like, I might put myself in on the wing then because they're putting me down as a fullback.
I have played scrum half for England. Not in the last decade, but...
you know what? It was mad doing the process, actually, because we did this long list in every single position, and you're like, oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Like, for all of these different people. And what was really tough is, and I think lots of people have been this debate about, like, the decade and you know, Brian O'Driscoll finished in 2013, Maggie finished in 2014. And like, but then, you know, for Maggie, I didn't do the guys one, but for Maggie, like, it was kind of like, well, how good were they? What impact did they have on their team? You know, the game, has anyone got close to them? And the thing is, there were so many amazing sevens. So Claire Malloy is unbelievable, world class. Justine Lavier for Black Ferns, unbelievable. There was, like, you know, I can't even think about all of the different ones, but I think Malloy in particular, you know, she's an incredible, incredible player. But Maggie was just like, different,
another level,
different,
yeah,
baby, yeah. But to be honest, like, to be named,
like, a big honor to be named part of that team.
Pardon?
Does it feel like a massive honor? Do you feel very proud of yourself, or is it a kind of, you know, oh, thanks?
No, I do.
I feel like a really important thing, because it is.
Yeah. No, I genuinely feel really proud, because I think for me, one of my driving forces, in particular in 2017, and why I took the concussion to miss the final so hard, was because, you know, I'd gone through a lot mentally. I decided, you know, did I want to retire? And one of my motivators was to prove to myself that I could be the best player in my position in the world, and playing in a World Cup final would help determine that. And I think that was kind of, like, genuinely was my thought process. There was obviously lots and lots of other factors, and I wasn't just gunning for that. But I think it's really hard in a team environment to get a global award, but to get it specifically for your position means that you've done something well in that shirt for that amount of time. And, like, I played across different positions, but to know that people have voted me into that because of the impact I had through the decade. And also it was the second half of my career. You know, I started in 2003. So I think that was really cool. And I think anything where you're voted by your peers, but also people in the media, people from other countries in particular, like, that's what was cool. And I think what was a shame, really, I texted a couple of the girls and said, like, Matt, like, so proud of them to get in. But I wish they'd been on those conversations. I wish they'd heard what people said about them, because it's so special, because you rarely ever get to say how amazing someone is when they're not one of your friends, or they're not somebody, you know, you've got massive amount of respect and you can show that. But the things that were said about, you know, my teammates, the things that I was able to express about my teammates, and also about people I've played against, like, you know, that was part of my criteria when I was thinking, is who in the team would I think, oh my God, like, I can't play against that person, you know, they're like brutal. They're going to be one of the biggest challenges for us. And that was part of, like, the influence of who got the shirt for me. Yeah. And, you know, I think we need to mention Skaz, because she was the only player in the women's team that had all 10 votes, which I think is just amazing. For her to own that is class. And, like, for me, I think the other side of it is the fact that I got to play with a load of them in the Barbarian shirt. And so, not just the Red Roses, you take for granted that England are such a dominant force. They're world-class players all the way through. There were so many players that missed out that could have been in there easily, that nearly were in it. But then it's the other people that you, when you get to play with them in the Barbarians, you get to see who they are as people as much as players. And you go, yeah, you know what? You are as cool as you seem on the field. And finally, you're not smashing me. I've got you to smash my, in particular, Linda Tunu.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Right, okay then. So that's Nolly the player. I want to know some of Nolly the coach's top tips following this autumn series. I know there's been a few things that have perhaps wound you up a little bit, or things that you think can be built on, or things that you've seen and you've been very happy with. So what are Nolly the coach's top tips following autumn in Nations Cup?
So actually thinking about the Barbarians game, there's a photograph of me. I go up for the air, to catch a ball, and Lydia Thompson, and I knew she had overrun it, and she's not like, she made team of the decade. She is unbelievable, world class, best, probably one of the best wingers I've ever played alongside, actually, just anyway. But I knew she'd overcooked her run. I knew she was going to probably hit me, and to delay my set, delay the time that I got to the floor, I tucked my legs, and there's a photograph of me doing a really, really high tuck jump as she's hitting me, which is, it's like, it's cool, apart from my facials and the strain in my neck. But one thing I've noticed, actually, and something that is fascinating, and for other people working with young players or coaching now, is how you coach catching a high ball.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that you cannot be hit in the air, the fact that you know, the implications if you do get touched in the air, or a penalty for you, obviously, you know, is to protect people. When I grew up, they always used to, you'd see this one knee up, so you'd go high hand, high shoulder, high hand, high elbow, high shoulder, high hip, high knee. And so you'd end up with this, like, basically with one knee up, and then they'd say high toes. So you'd put your studs up. So basically to say, and this is like going back, God, years and years ago, that people wouldn't want to run into your studs.
Yeah.
So your foot is there.
Yeah.
And actually Mike Brown did a version of it by mistake, and basically did a Eric Cantona on someone's chest the other day. Not intentional at all, but it was pretty awful. Anyway, but now what you're seeing is, instead of like going up one footed, you do leap like that, but also you tuck your other leg up, because then there's a delay. There's a longer time before you hit the floor, which means
it's the onus on the player to stop somebody from hitting them, because now that player coming to them isn't allowed to touch them anyway.
Well, you can, no. So basically there are collisions in the air when you're both going for the ball, when you're both looking at the ball, and like they're fair, it's a fair contest. When it's not a fair contest is when someone just leaps and jumps and smashes you without going for the ball, or they tackle you before your feet touch the floor. Now, it could be one blade of grass that's touching your stud, and I've had that, and oh my God, you get absolutely mullered. And it's probably why I do it, because I don't want to get smashed. But it's just something to look at, look out for. I think it's really cool. It's about body management. It's about understanding control. When you hit the floor, you're in a slightly different position. But the implications of the timing of the person running and to make that tackle, if you delay it by a split second, they have to stop. And so they therefore lose a lot of momentum. It's a bit geeky, but I do love it.
Does it mean that you're landing with 2 feet as opposed to 1 feet as what? Well? 1 feet? 1 foot? Are you giving yourself a firmer base when you do land with the ball?
Actually, to be fair, that's a good shot, because normally you hit with, you'd go up with one and land on one. So as you come down with two, you're probably more likely to split stance. When you land. I hadn't thought about that.
I would love for you to see, there's a video doing the rounds of Harry Kane, and it would be perhaps quite interesting for you to go into a few Premier League clubs and do a little coaching session ahead of teams playing Spurs, because what he does to players who are going up to head a ball in rugby would be a red card every day of the week and then some. It is insane.
It's him backing into someone, isn't it?
Yeah, so he basically, as soon as someone goes up in the air, he will turn his body and run backwards into them and make out that he hasn't seen them, but then he goes down with them, and in a couple of instances he's won the, like, I don't know what you call it in football, the foul, I guess. Yeah. It's gone his way, despite the fact that in rugby he'd be off the field for that. Like, yeah. And the reality is, and it, you know, on social media this morning, there were a few players who were like, oh, you'd get a red card for that in rugby. Sometimes you trivialise it a little bit. What he's doing, the reason that it's a red card in rugby is because it's so dangerous to take someone out in the air and take away their ability to land themselves safely on the ground.
Yeah.
Because you could break your neck.
Yeah, no, it is mad, to be fair. And actually, you get tipped so quickly in the air. Like, it is a bit crazy. And you see some players, I think, Anthony Watson.
Gravity, isn't it?
Anthony Watson went up. The worst is when you land on your coccyx. Like, oh God, it's, like, brutal because you've lost your feet. I think, yeah, so just for any coaches, it's not, I'm not saying jump in a tuck jump. I'm saying it's the same technique to launch, but you then just bring up your other leg and then it just delays the landing a little bit. But yeah, the other side, the other thing that I'm going to put it out there on the podcast before anyone steals it, because I have mentioned it to a couple of people. Okay. But so loads of, and what we're seeing loads at the moment is obviously pick and go tries. And the problem is you're now seeing new techniques where forwards, it's mental. They just fly head first. They try and put their arms around, but they're just chopping them at the shins, and it is rank. And like, when I see training like it and games, I'm like, no way. Someone actually, I said to me at the weekend, like, does that hurt? I was like, I was never near it. I don't know. I was on the far side of the field. Like, no.
Come on, guys. Good luck. Yeah,
but something, so it was Wales, Italy. Or might have been the week before. Basically, one of the players runs into the 10, so Garbisi. And Garbisi's like desperately trying to hold some grip, but there's no way momentum, if you're shoulder to shoulder in a sprinter stance with somebody, or like sprinter stance with someone, the heavier player's going to win because it's just momentum and strength. So I think, and I did this years ago, when I was playing for Wasps, my first ever game, I'd left Bristol, moved to Wasps, and the first game we played Bristol away. Oh my God. I think the Wasps girls were doing it on purpose just to take the piss out of me, because I made nearly 18 tackles on back five players. So back five of the scrum, right? So, and actually one on better, like, it was horrendous. And actually in that game, to be fair, Claire Malloy's died at me because I didn't even make those tackles, but they were just barreling through. I was battered. And then all of a sudden, Izzy Noel-Smith, right? So she's an absolute tank, gets the ball about 5 metres from the line, and the guard is like looking away as if to be, I'm like, oh God, I've got to get in the position. I'm never here. I thought the only way I can stop it, I can't, if I push my shoulder into her, she's just going to literally just push me like a spring, and I'm not going to spring back. I'm just going to spring. Like, you know, so I just thought, I'm going to have to koala bear her. I'm going to have to hug her and the ball and sacrifice my spine. And so I managed to basically wrap my arms and my legs around her like a baby / a koala. And when she landed on me, which did knock a bit of wind out of me, but no try because my body was engrossed in it. So a little bit of an interesting one. Is this potentially a new tackle technique? The way that you do it is you throw your feet up and around somebody and pull them down onto you rather than trying to propel them away from the line. Does that make sense?
It does, but I feel like, what are we going to call it? Like the kamikaze koala or the limpet or...
The limpet.
I quite like the limpet.
And actually, to be fair, I was at HSBC Premier Suite last year in Dubai. There was a lady that knew Izzy, had texted Izzy to say, Nolly's in the Premier Suite, what should I ask her? And Izzy had actually said, ask her to show you the koala tackle. So I decided to ask Brian Banner, can I do the koala tackle on you? And he was like, naively said yes, in front of thousands or a couple of hundred people.
Hey, should have asked Gregan. Of all the people who would have been there, Gregan would have been a better bet for that.
No, I think it had more of an impact because Brian's really lovely and he didn't expect anything, and I basically smashed it and grabbed it and
anyway. Great. Okay. Well, they're Nolly's coaching tips.
Tell you what though, frustration. Oh. As a coach, player, the whole situation. Pardon?
You're not a player anymore.
If I was a player. Okay. If I was a player, what's that song that I've just made up?
If I was a rich man.
Yeah, if I was a player. I don't know, I'd like leave it.
It's from Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, okay. That's a good name.
Gwen Stefani covered it, obviously.
Yeah, that's I do like a bit of Gwen Stefani.
I know where you're going with this, your frustration, and it's going to be deliberate knock-ons, isn't it?
It breaks me. Like, you get a yellow card for putting your hand out to potentially get an intercept that everyone would be absolutely juicing over it if you got it. If you don't, you get the same penalty, you get the same sanction as if you take someone's head off in a tackle. And I just, and so that it got me, it's been frustrating me for a little while because it's not to the letter of the, right, so they brought it in last season to the letter of the law. If you put your hand out, yellow card, right, okay, bam. Then they've kind of eased off, and so it's a penalty, so it's, right, and then, so then, instantly, it's down to interpretation. Now, this is not, by any means, a dig at referees, and maybe we can get Coxie on, because I feel like they're in a really bad position, because Wayne Barnes, France, Italy, Italian puts his hand out to potentially go for the intercept. He doesn't smash it down. You actually see in slow motion his hand move upwards, yeah, but it goes forward. Nigel Owens, by the letter of the law, which he's going to do, yellow card. In that time, 19 points were scored. The first try came from a line break that would have been covered by that position. Now, he was off the field, Triller, yeah, the number 14. And they lost the game. At that point, Italy had managed to kind of stay in it because they were frustrating France. As soon as that try happened, it was like, right, floodgates are open, momentum, confidence. Last week, Ireland, Scotland, player of the first 30 minutes, Duncan Taylor, absolutely levelled Johnny Sexton. Was actually the one that gave him the dead leg, I think. Carries, communication, organisation, unbelievable. Shoots out the line, goes to smother tackle, stops the tackle but knocks it on because his arm is in the way, because it's potentially a try scoring opportunity because there was an overlap, yellow card. You take a player off the field, but you take the most influential player at that moment off the field. Hoggy was having an awesome game, but like it was because he was getting a good platform, and Ireland couldn't play because Duncan Taylor was just getting up and smashing people. And then Ireland score before half time, and then momentum's like massively in Ireland's favour, and I just feel like it's mad. Like it's such a, they need to look at, like they it's easier said than done, and I get that, but there needs to be something. And someone said about I don't know, they tweeted me or someone said something about I don't know if it's like a handball in football, so it's hand to ball or ball to hand. And I don't know, like, whether...
But I think the weird thing is that in rugby, for so long, with, like, foul play, with... I mean, now it's been taken out for because of player safety, but we've talked about intent. Intent has been something that had been written into our law book for so many years, for so many different things. And surely, when it comes to it, you know, it's called a deliberate knock-on, but the reality is that in certain instances, it's not a deliberate knock-on, that it's a knock-on as a result of deliberately trying to stop a try. And this accusation that it's a professional foul, when that, I think that's the issue there. That, and it, I also, again, I feel a lot at the moment, like I keep talking about the negativity within rugby and the things that I'm acutely aware and concerned about the fact that at the moment, rugby isn't a hugely mass appeal sport. We are becoming a greater niche sport all the time. And I don't want to see that happen. This is the sport I've grown up loving. But for some reason, it increasingly feels like it's becoming a bit of a closed shop. These are the rules. These are the laws that alienate people, because people can't get their head around it.
People, well, if I can't, and I'm a complete norm.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. If you were somebody who didn't watch rugby, and for the first time you're watching a rugby match, and you watch that, you'd look at Duncan Taylor and you go, oh, great defence. What? Oh, no, it's not. He's being yellow carded for what he just did. And that's where I think there needs to be a more holistic approach to some of these things. We need to take a step back to look in, and maybe if that does mean law variation trials like we've seen around the world. I think that's the thing that seems weird at the moment, that for a long time in the early noughties we saw law variation trials, things like the white card, you know, I'm going to refer this to be looked at after the game because I'm not sure what it is here and now, or all these different things that we've trialed. At the moment it doesn't feel like we trial anything, we just keep making changes.
Yeah, and you know what, you're completely right, and I just feel like it's the interpretation of the intent. And you know, I know pretty much one of the reasons why it's there is that so that you can't slap the ball down. And you can't, you know, on a 2-on-1 you can't just, you know, push your hand out, because that's the easy option than having to make the tackle. Do you know what I mean? But then there needs, so but now there's, I think what I'm really worried about, and this is what frustrated me with the Truller incident in the Italy game, was, well, and both of them, basically, is actually positive what they've just done. We want to encourage defenders to, like with Duncan Taylor, coming out the line, shooting, going and getting someone. Like, we're talking about, like, positive actions from a defence, from a defensive player. You know, Truller, his hands came upwards. If he'd caught that ball and run the length, everyone would have gone berserk, because Italy had scored an intercept try against France, and yet because he doesn't quite catch it, because it gets knocked on, they lose the game. And yeah, all right, they possibly would have lost the game anyway, but that's not the point. It's like, how can something be so definitive, like have such an impact if it is right or wrong?
You've said there, which is the crux of a lot of these issues, is it's interpretation. And I'm trying to think what game it has been that I've done this year where I was in the truck and it was a Liam Williams, and it went to a TMO to see if it was a deliberate knock-on. And in the truck, we're replaying angles of this, and it's, what direction is his hand pointing in? You're thinking, one TMO can sit in there and make a decision on this. The next week, a completely different person makes a different decision. And then you go to studio and you have comments like, well, it's Liam Williams 9 times out of 10. But then how can you quantify that over another player? Because, yeah, Liam Williams 9 times out of 10 might have gathered that ball and he was going for it. And then there might be a prop where you say, oh, Joe Marler, 1 out of 10, he's going to catch it. But how do you know that that wasn't the 1 out of 10, that he was going to gather that ball? And that's where I feel like that's where there's an issue. Nothing's black and white. And we're increasing the grey area because we are a sport, I think we've got so much grey matter, and that's the problem.
Yeah. There was a situation, I feel like maybe one of the Champions Cup games where a prop went for the ball and they said, oh, there's no way he would have caught it. And I think it was because I was with Chris Ashton, and Chris Ashton said, no, Nolly, there's no way he would have caught it because he's a prop. And I was like, come on, like, you know. But I just feel like intercept tries are some of the most exciting. And because it literally is like panic stations, like, running back.
That's when you see second rows that have got the turning circle of cruise ships.
Or when you see like mad cover try saving tackles, or like just completely against the grain. And I just feel like if, you know, and like I said with Duncan Taylor, I'm going to keep going on. We'll stop talking about all of this, but we want to encourage defenders to be brave, to make decisions where he's literally about a 12-on-1, and he's made the decision, I've got to come up and shut this down. It is exactly the right decision. But if you get a yellow card for that decision, like, is he going to make that decision again? If a younger player watching it is seeing that, you know, when we're saying, go and get them.
Yeah.
Then, and he's like, well, you know, it's so.
And we're talking about it from a defensive framework perspective. And it's interesting that you mentioned Chris Ashton, because Chris Ashton's most famous try comes from an intercept at Twickenham.
The difference
between Chris Ashton scoring one of the most iconic tries, probably second most iconic try to be scored at Twickenham, in my humble opinion, versus
Johnny Mays the other day.
versus a knockdown, yellow card, he's off the field for 10 minutes, England lose that game to Australia. So, and that's where, yeah, we want things to be exciting, but I don't think that this is something that promotes excitement. If anything, it's going to start to dampen.
I just feel like it needs to be, unless there is massive intent, like yellow cards are huge now. They are so huge. And it could it be like the free kick or penalty? Like, you know, do you know what I mean? Those are the two versions of it. Or like you base, or I don't know, just a penalty or something. But anyway, should we move on?
Yeah, so next...
we've got a list of questions today to rattle through.
I just want us to get through it because otherwise we waffle like we are. There were fans at Twickenham, but there have also been fans in at Premier 15's games.
Yeah, it was really cool. And actually, I didn't tune into much of it because I was super bogged down with watching all the Nations Cup game, the Autumn Nations Cup games, but managed to have on whilst Ireland playing Scotland on my phone. I had Wasps v Loughborough Lightning, unbelievable result for Wasps to get a win like that, and to see a crowd and to hear actual noise. So I just am really I'm really proud of women's rugby. You know, actually, that it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit because there's so much been happening with Gallagher Premiership restarting, the Autumn Nations Cup, the like all of the, what's the name of the games over in New Zealand and Australia?
Championship.
Yeah, that's a bad boy.
Nations, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad boy. But actually, because all of that's been going on, we've kind of forgotten that the women's game is as still deemed as a semi-professional amateur sport, it's been able to continue successfully. There has been, unfortunately, a breakout in the Saracens camp, so they've had to cancel two games, but there's only been around five or six games cancelled, so hat tip to all of them. I think it's been brilliant.
Yeah, and you know what, that's as much as it's a semi-professional league, it shows a huge level of professionalism, resourcefulness and maturity to have preserved the league as it's been so far, and we're all very thankful about that. Right, and moving on to the next thing, do you want me to get you a season ticket for the Blues with me and Dad?
You're such an idiot. I know exactly what you're referring to as well, because
I'm just thinking, like,
I saw the announcement on Twitter.
Your university crush Dwayne Peel is coming to the Blues to be senior assistant coach. We sit right behind the director's box, so you'd be real.
I'll be in, mate. Well, I'm there.
Yeah,
you know what,
it's on the list. Block three.
I am dreading the moment that I am with you in a bar in Cardiff or somewhere, not even in a bar, because I think if I've had a few drinks I won't mind, but just in the most awkward, cringe-worthy environment where you announce it to him. He's super shy and quiet and awkward. Yeah. I wouldn't know what to do, and probably, because it's actual fact. Like, I actually fancied him.
You're so flustered.
I'm going red now. It's so bad.
Oh, I'm so excited. The Blues aren't doing great at the moment. I really hope they qualify for Champions Cup rugby next season, because I'm going to tee this up with your producers. Do you know what I think would be great? Why don't you send Nolly to interview Dwayne Peel? Maybe we could do it like a Valentine's Day theme. No?
Right. On that embarrassing note.
European rugby. That's what I want to talk about next. Let's fire through this.
I've got 6 minutes to order food from... Okay, well... from room service, because I'm currently sat in a hotel room. So,
okay, well, these are the two final questions. Number one, how excited are you for European rugby being back this weekend?
Yay!
Number two, one of the games is Scarlet's Bath. Do you know what those two teams play for when they face each other?
I have no idea.
Well, this is something that you need to ask your dad about, Big Jim. So the Scarlet's Bath match is one that I love, because since March 1921, so 100 years next year, those two teams have played off for a ragdoll. It is known as the ragdoll match. It is not the
really? Same.
It is. The ragdoll will be on the post on the weekend, so look out for it. It's not the same ragdoll for the whole 99 years. We know that one of them is buried at the bottom of the Avon after a very historic Bath win in the 1980s, I believe. So maybe that's one that Jim was involved in. But yeah, so that's a little fact for everyone this weekend. If you see the ragdoll on the post and you wonder what it is, it's what...
Screenshot it, get a shot and tag us
in
it.
Yeah, tag us in it. So send us pictures of the ragdoll. So when you see it on screen, send us a picture.
Bye, everybody. Nice to be back. See you soon.
See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.